My Eagle enthusiasts, it's Fairway Rollin' presented by FanDuel. Major season is here and you can get in on all the long drives, big putts, and major moments with FanDuel. Check out live PGA Tour bets like longest drive, round leaders, matchups, birdie or better, and more. Plus, track every shot in the app and watch select par three holes while you place your bets. Download the app today and bet with FanDuel, the official betting operator of the PGA Tour. Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. You must be 21 years old or older and present in select states. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, from superchargers and brakes to exhaust kits and beyond, eBay Motors levels your baby up to its peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today's episode of Shack House, we discuss all things we really don't want to talk about from the Valero Texas Open, the Tiger Woods biography, Patrick Reed's post-Masters victory, and an almost House of Cards, Carbs episode. We will explore the state of food and golf with Bon Appetit editor Adam Rappaport, fresh off of attending his first Masters and more. But of course, as you know, Shack House is brought to you by our friends at Callaway, makers of the Chrome Soft and Chrome Soft X, which will soon be available in a new Truvis that is to be unveiled on Tuesday's Morning Drive on the Golf Channel. So check it out. I don't want to spoil it, but if you're hearing the show after the airing, which is most likely, check out my website or go to Callaway, search around. There's going to be some really cool video inside the factory. If you're one of those people like me who loves to know how things are made, you're going to get to see how a Chrome Soft is put together in beautiful Massachusetts. I've been up there to another ball company's plant, and it is a lot of fun to see what goes into making a golf ball. House, I can't wait to hear how many Chrome Softs you played in your 100-hole hike, but also, did you wear any Proper Cloth shirts while you played?
Well, I'm going to give a shout out to our friends at Proper Cloth. Shaq, it was freezing cold here in Washington, D.C.
Really?
This past Friday. Yeah, the wind chill was 31 degrees at 8:30 in the morning when I teed off. But so I didn't exactly have my Proper Cloth on for the round. But as the listeners know, Proper Cloth is the leader in men's custom shirts. Are you having trouble finding shirts that fit, Shaq? Let me tell you, at propercloth.com, ordering custom shirts has never been easier. You create your custom shirt size by answering quickly 10 easy questions. Shirts start at just $80 and are delivered in 2 weeks. Perfect fit is guaranteed. So $80 for a perfect fit, that's a good deal. If a shirt doesn't fit, they will remake it for free. And the whole process is risk-free for that reason. For premium quality, perfect-fitting shirts, visit propercloth.com/shackhouse and use gift code SHACKHOUSE, SHACKHOUSE, to get $20 off your first custom shirt today.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I was just checking out their site. They've got some good stuff. I'm on top. I'm working the code. I'm going to use, and my name's in it. I'm so excited. All right, let's go to the Shack House. House, greetings from the Shack House, part of the Ringer Podcast Network, where, of course, the House of Carbs resides as well. And I know you have a little NBA playoffs Food City show.
Yeah, the Podfather Bill Simmons and I sat down and ranked all of the cities that are hosting NBA playoff competitions 16-1, and there was a lot of debate, mainly on the latter half of the list. Cities that came in at the sort of the 10-16 range did not like their placement. So we had a follow-up show. We had the first show with the rankings with the Podfather Bill Simmons, and then we had on a native Clevelander, or at least a guy that spent some time there, the Chief Craig Gaines from the Ringer Universe, came on and gave us a nice defensive Cleveland. He argued for Cleveland well inside the top 10, maybe even cracking the top 5. But I don't know whether they're going to land there or not. But don't forget, TheRinger.com has you covered in all things NBA playoffs and for this upcoming Thursday NFL draft.
I just want to know how a city complained that they weren't where they wanted to be on your list, but I'm assuming that was just kind of the people in the cities that lodged those complaints.
Okay, correct. Good. The eaters, so, all the hungry homies.
You played 100 golf holes on Friday for a fantastic cause. How are you doing? Have you recovered? I have never played more than 45 in a day, I believe. That's incredible.
Thank you very much. It was a collaboration between our friends at Golf Fights Cancer, who we've championed many times here on the podcast, and they came down here at the request and insistence of the Duffy brothers, Rob Duffy in particular, scheduled and organized one of these golf marathons here in the DMV, and Golf Fights Cancer coming into my backyard. You know that I had to go make an appearance at it. The beneficiary of all everybody's fundraising is a wonderful facility here in the Washington, D.C. area called the Children's Inn, which is located on the grounds of the National Institutes of Health. Families and kids that are dealing with pediatric cancer can come and stay. It is a hotel. It is a place, a comfortable place for families to come to take on the challenges that the kids are confronted with and by, and, you know, try and make as normal as an experience as possible, notwithstanding the treatment and the protocols the kids might be going through. So obviously a very, very worthwhile charity. There was about 35 of us that went out into the freezing cold. This was April the 20th here in the Washington, D.C. area. It was, I'm telling you, 31 degree wind chill at 8:30 in the morning. I had winter gloves on both hands, a winter hat, a turtleneck up to my nose, a windbreaker sweater over top of it. The flannels were on underneath the pants. I mean, I had on ski socks. It was the whole nine yards. But, you know, no complaining whatsoever when you're out there for a great cause. I would say I'm half recovered right now. My lower half, my legs and everything are kind of fine. It's the upper body. A lot of swings for a guy of my age, Shaq. That's a lot of lot of, you know, rotation, a lot of getting the wrist into the proper spot, you know, a lot of follow through. The nice thing about this, it was very, just from a pure golf perspective, it was very liberating. I enjoyed.
How so?
Well, you can swing freely because you know you're going to swing.
Yeah.
There's so many swings.
Exactly. Just,
you're not standing over this like, please don't go left, please don't go right. And I had a miss. I had a two-way miss on Friday. And the nice thing is, like, each hole you play with several balls at a time because it's the only sensible way to get in 100 holes over the course of the day. So we would put, you know, we might play 5 balls on one par 3 and 3 balls on one par 4, shortish par 4. And so if I missed left, then I would turn my whole outfit so I could miss the next two left as well, so I could zoom the cart over and play all three balls. But we played all three balls into the hole. I was paired up with a great guy, Mike Antolini from the Tiger Woods Foundation.
Oh, great. Oh, I know Mike.
Yeah, you know Mike,
sure.
Of course. Yeah, and he gives you his best. A little shout out
great,
to you.
Nice.
And we just had a wonderful time going around the track. It got warmer throughout the course of the day. It may or may not have been helped by the fact that they had beer in bottles. One of my all-time favorite things. When they serve the beer in the bottle, very authentic. And I enjoyed enough of those to warm up in the morning. And then, you know, it carried on through the balance of the day. And we really wrapped up probably pretty close. 8:30 start time. We were done about 6 o'clock with our 100 holes. And I was very, very proud. The very first swing of the day. Now I hit more off of this tee, but my very first swing of the day, 162 yard par 3. I hit a ball, a little butter cut with, of course, one of my brand new Rogue X irons to about 12 feet, and I made the putt, Shaq. Birdie on the very first ball of the day.
Wow.
It all went downhill from there, of course, but, you know, awesome experience. I highly recommend it. If the golf marathon comes to your town, sign up right away.
And so how do people kind of get involved in those kinds of 100-hole hikes? Is it individuals in certain areas that just get together and start one? Or
I think that's what happened. It has traditionally been, and, you know, Golf Fights Cancer, its history tracks back to about 15 years ago, a collaboration between the current commissioner of the PGA Tour, Jay Monahan, and his co-collaborator, Brian Oates, who works for the Patriots, had a friend pass away way too early and just were motivated to go do something. And both of them immediately signed up for the Boston Marathon and started raising money by way of you know, mile by mile, how can we do this? And so as time went on with the charity, they came to understand not everybody's going to run a marathon. Like, I'm never running a marathon. So they invented kind of a golf-appropriate marathon, which is 100 holes in a day. And it's traditionally been up in the New England area. But, you know, as word has spread and folks want to do their part, it has sort of, you know, there are opportunities up and down at least the East Coast now. And I think it's just a simple matter of sort of coordinating with the charity, Golf Fights Cancer. They know exactly what they're doing in terms of creating these events. You have to find, you know, 30 to 40 hearty souls, and you have to find the right venue for it.
Yeah.
And God bless the great facility out at Bretton Woods here in the D.C. area. It's out in Germantown, Maryland, and it's a club that was created for the families, international families, coming here to the D.C. area at work at the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Yep. Huh. And so it's a pretty neat place, pretty diverse and international, and a great club, perfect venue for this experience. So everything worked out great.
Beautiful, beautiful. That's awesome. Well, we haven't talked to anybody really since Sunday night of the Masters. So it's been an interesting few weeks of recuperating. But my sense has been that it's a Masters that, even if people didn't really care for Patrick Reed, they really felt good about. I've had a lot of people bring it up, you know, the usual places you kind of test out what a great, exciting finish it was. So I think all is well in the world of golf in that sense. I don't think we really want to belabor too much of Patrick Reed's victory tour. I don't quite get people bemoaning his wearing of the green jacket everywhere, but
it's so
just
weird. What else would you do? Are you kidding me? Of course. Yeah. I would never take it off. And yeah. I would be going to, like, where are the most people right now? That's where I want to go. That's where I want to be. I want to be where there's great concentration of humanity, because I'm going to be the dude in the green jacket. I just wore the green jacket, for Christ's sakes. Let the kid live a little bit.
Yeah, I don't understand it. Again, I think it's probably more personal with him. But he resurfaces this week at the Zurich Classic, which we'll talk about in a little bit, after our chat with Adam Rappaport of Bon Appetit, which is going to get into a lot of food stuff. It's going to be fun. What else do you not want to talk about this week before we get to that? Because we don't want to belabor too much. But did you get a chance yet to listen to Bill and Chuck Klosterman talking about the Tiger Woods biography by chance? So,
I listened to a little bit of it, and I also, you know, had done a little bit on my own research around excerpts of the book and just sort of reading to get a feel for what it's all about. I have to tell you, I think everybody that listens to this podcast knows what a Tiger apologist I am. And I've been really turned off by the approach and by the content of this book. It is, to me, just from the bit that I've read of the book and the bits of you know, the descriptions of folks and other folks' reactions, it's a linear presentation of facts already known with a, to me, an over-the-line interpolation of, you know, this is what Tiger was thinking, and this is what, you know, so, like, when you're talking about what the inside of his house looks like as he's sort of going through his recovery and so forth, or you're talking about he's in a car driving to the airport with Stevie Williams, and you're purporting to present what really feels like firsthand information about what each of those individuals was thinking and the nature of that experience. I just am really skeptical. It's a hard sell for me. I just can't get myself there, and it's a credibility impairer for me. So that's kind of my reaction. I have a hard time with it.
Yeah, no, I do too. And part of it is it's just tough to get excited about a biography of somebody who's still living and breathing and performing in front of us. And I was a little surprised that Bill and Chuck kind of read it as a almost a postmortem, and that the chances of him coming back are kind of over, or that was the feeling they had. It was interesting that it just left them with sort of a bad feeling about Tiger in a lot of ways, and I think that's unfortunate. I understand certainly people being offended by some of the things that they read, but personally, I'm just kind of more interested in the golf side of things and where he goes and what he does. And so right now it just feels like rehashing a lot of things in a very well-written and certainly well-documented way. But even some of the conversations they went through and some of the stuff related to Bill Clinton, just has been, it could be interpreted a lot of different ways. And there's no question Tiger has blown off a lot of things he should have gone to or this or that. But I just don't know if it's something I want to belabor right now, and you could probably really nitpick with a lot of the great stars. So it's not been, I'll be honest with you, House, I'm really enjoying much more Golden Days by Jack McCallum, the great Sports Illustrated writer, who's done a cool morphing of the Lakers and of 71-72 and Jerry West era with the building of the Warriors, and I'm just finding that a lot more fun to read. But anyway, that's just me. Maybe I want a little diversion from golf, or I don't really need to know about the rehab and the women again. I've been through it once.
Yep, exactly.
So, that's what else do we not want to talk about this week? Anything else? The Valero Texas Open, the Hugel JTBC LA Open at Wilshire Country Club. Anything
well,
you got?
I know that we are going to talk about Wilshire a little bit with Rapo. And that whole deal, it was visually stunning. So it's something that I would like to talk about because I know you were physically there. So let's spend at least 120 seconds. Let's give a good full 2 minutes on that LPGA event at Wilshire, because it felt like we were getting a glimpse at something that is special and rare and, exclusive. And I really applaud the LPGA and the club for, figuring out a way to let the outside world come get a perspective of great players on that course. It's so visually arresting. I loved watching it. How was it on the grounds there?
Sensational. And they knew there was a good chance we'd get good crowds, but you still never know until it happens. And this is when Rancho Park hosted the seniors years ago in the middle of the city. We'd get great crowds, and the turnout was phenomenal for this, for a tournament that had been on the schedule for all of 5 months. And the venue, I thought the Golf Channel team just did an amazing job of capturing what is a course that just doesn't get a lot of attention often because of Riviera and Los Angeles Country Club in this town. But I guess it was just a combination of the weather, the late light, the cool architecture, the great camera shots of Hollywood and the old studios. And of course, Terry Gannon lives here, so he had just the right amount of kind of LA insights. And then the women really played beautifully. I don't get to enough LPGA events, so it was fun for me just to go out and watch. And I seeing some impressive things going on in the women's game that really get me excited. And so it's really fun to see them get put on a golf course like this, to get to see players with a, it reminded me of old style men's golf. NB Park's kind of this methodical precision player, and she made a couple of gaffes yesterday that where it was really ended up being the difference. And then Jutana Garn, she's tiny and she's got a really powerful swing. And then Ko, the other player in the last group, just has a phenomenal golf swing, absolutely beautiful, and a little bit different style, also kind of a power player, and that's kind of what you used to see in men's golf, so it'll be fun, and then the short games are just getting better and better in women's golf. That's always been an issue to me, and I don't know what that's about, if it's just, it's probably dedication. The dedication of the players out there is amazing, and then they're just fan-friendlier, and so the vibe is a little bit different than a men's event, so it's always fun to kind of see all that, and then to have it put in prime time. And then I think juxtapose against the Valero Texas Open on a kind of big, soulless golf course you don't really sense the players are enjoying even that much, I think helped even more as well.
So that, let me pick up on that, because you just sort of tapped onto something. This is going to be much more than a two-minute conversation.
Yeah, we've already exceeded the 120.
Well, here's the interesting thing about the observation you just made as I'm listening to it and thinking about it. The great challenge of whatever combination of the current crop of men's players and the equipment and the ball and the impact of those three factors on, you know, sort of more traditional courses, and by traditional I mean courses from another era, who are no longer able to host events. Maybe the way that we can celebrate great architecture and great courses that have been, by virtue of the three factors I mentioned, perhaps rendered vulnerable or even obsolete by the distance in the men's game. What if we got the women to places like the, you know, Marion? And I don't know if the National falls in that category, but some of our nation's most prized venues that are really not able to sort of host men's events without significant alteration of the design concept.
Yeah.
Is that an option? What
it
about
is,
the women?
Yeah. Absolutely. Marion's already actually been incredible in terms of supporting the women's game, but National would be a fascinating one. Chicago Golf Club is hosting the first U.S. Senior Women's Open, and it's kind of, I think, going to be a breakthrough get for women's golf. And Wilshire, I believe, will end up being viewed that way because, frankly, I went through the schedule, and architecturally, it's as good as anything they play in the United States. And I think when people see that combination, and then I think it's mostly the clubs, as they have to get over probably a little bit of sexism or whatever it is. But I know, seeing the way the Wilshire members were last week, how proud they were, the way their course translated to television, and seeing those women, how well they played their golf course, and how good their ball striking was, it was fast and firm, and to win at 12 under was really impressive, and we had some pretty good breezes out there. So I think when clubs get over some of those kind of stereotypes of what and the prestige of hosting a men's versus a women's, they have a chance to really scoop up a lot of courses, and the Champions Tour has had that too, but they're struggling at times for sponsors, so in there it's so much a hospitality thing. So I think you're absolutely right. I wrote a piece on Golf Week that touched on this a little bit, and I think it's something that the LPGA Tour needs to kind of pounce on. And you just look at, in every city, there are places like Wilshire's of the world that could host.
Yeah, it feels like there's an opportunity there. And you know, this, I don't mean to diminish the women's game at all, but the fact that the crowds will be smaller definitely creates opportunities in terms of the ability of the venue to navigate, you know, just the press of people. I'm into this. I hope that they seize the opportunity. Maybe we should talk to Mike Wan. Can we have him on?
He was out walking with the last group yesterday, and I decided to leave him alone. I decided not to bend his ear because I think he was kind of taking in the scene. I remember it was on the 7th and 8th holes, and the crowd was just enormous. I had a blast out there. I was so happy for the whole thing because it really came together last minute. So they'll build on it, and next year they'll do more. I mean, Mark Wahlberg recorded a great little intro piece, and Golf Channel did an amazing job showing off the place, and then it just helped. Like today, we had brutal haze, but for the four days of the tournament, it was absolutely breathtaking out and clear views of downtown and all that stuff. So yeah, it was nice for LA and nice. And there were more people with the last group yesterday than there were for the entire U.S. Amateur Riviera, so that was exciting too. Okay, so anything else we want to kick around before we get to our good pal Adam Rappaport? Anything on food?
I'm hungry. Let's just talk to Rappaport.
He's going to make you hungry. But before we do that, of course, our friends at Callaway are makers of the number one putter in golf, the Odyssey. And House, I know you're excited about this because you actually have studied these photographs more intricately than I have of the new line of XEO putters that were announced just last week and will be available on May 18th. If you're into industrial design, if you're just into design, period, I think you're going to really get a kick out of these. These are absolutely beautiful putters. Of course, they have the new white hot micro hinge insert. You know, we have to have that. But they have the feel, the sound with the immediate roll from the micro hinge. The EXO features three of Odyssey's most popular mallet head shapes, the 7, the Rossi, and the Indianapolis. And each of these models is offered in face balance and toe hang options to fit a golfer's stroke. Go Google around EXO or go to CallawayGolf.com and check those out. I know House you have, and they're up in the design game. I'm loving this industrial thing.
Yeah, I got to see these putters at the PGA show, and I might have touched one with both hands of mine.
You're kidding.
Oh. And it was quite glorious. I really recommend just give it a test drive, right? I mean, you know, putters are a very personal thing. I understand.
May 18th.
Everybody needs to experience it themselves. I recommend everybody put both of your hands on one of these things.
All right, so May 18th now. In the meantime, though, House, we've got the Zurich Classic this week, and we thought if we're going to go talk about golf in New Orleans, we've got to have our good buddy who knows everything there is to know about food, style, life, golf, everything as we know it. That's Adam Rappaport, the editor of Bon Appetit since 2011. You know, House, this week they've got restaurants like Arnaud's, Bourbon House, Drago's. Of course, the cool. I mean, the New Orleans event has got it right, and they should. It's New Orleans. It's known for its food. And so that's why we want to talk to Adam. Of course, he was previously at GQ for 10 years. He oversaw a range of coverage. He's done everything, food, fashion, and even snuck in a round of golf with Justin Timberlake. He's a regular on House of Carbs. Thank God. I love listening to him. Although you're going to keep him seasonal. I know you said that, but I love his appearances. He just attended his first Masters. We're going to grill him about that. And he's going to join us from Condé Nast headquarters in New York City. Let's get to our chat with Adam Rappaport of Bon Appetit. All right, Adam Rappaport, welcome to the Shack House. You know Joe House quite well from all of your appearances on House of Carbs, but how are you doing? Have you recovered from the Masters?
I ate well at the Masters. I drank well at the Masters. Not a lot of golf or exercise, but, you know, that's how it goes.
You've had a little time to think about it, so reflect on your first impressions on your first trip to Augusta.
You know, well, you were kind enough to walk us around that first day, and I think what's amazing about the Masters was on Wednesday during the practice round, it felt like the grounds were swarming with people going this way and that and running over to the par three and getting their concessions and going to the pro shops and everything. And I was fascinated on Thursday when I came back, and it was like school was in session all of a sudden. Everyone was quiet. Everyone was sitting where they were supposed to sit. There was no running. There was no milling about. Everyone was on their best behavior. And it was fascinating to feel and see that transformation of the general tenor of the course once the actual tournament started.
Well, and House, you guys did a great job on House of Carbs, I thought, covering all the food. And, of course, Adam nailed what I love about the Georgia Peach ice cream sandwich. It's not just the flavor. It's the construction of it, the way it doesn't just explode when you take the first bite. It was a great listen if people haven't checked out the show. House, was there anything you wanted to reflect upon Masters-wise from your time with Adam?
I just enjoyed having the opportunity to sit with such an expert food person and get some live reviews as I attempted various hacks. Most of my hacks, he gave me a two thumbs down, but he did. It gave me a little bit of a thumbs up approval when I combined half of a pimento cheese sandwich with, and you're not supposed to say pimento cheese. You're supposed to say half a pimento with a with one of the classic chicken. You know, the classic chicken comes off as kind of a dry thing. It's just the protein in the bun. But you take the pimento and layer it on with the chicken. Now you got yourself something. And I was very pleased Rappo gave me a thumbs up on that one.
All right, so we had you on, Adam, this week because it's New Orleans. There's a lot of focus on the food. The PGA Tour has really gotten into food at tournaments, more and more food trucks, and I think New Orleans is one of the events that's really raised the bar in our introduction of you. I mentioned some of the people involved. But your overall view of the state of we'll first start with the New Orleans food scene and just your impressions of golf tournaments going in this direction with on-site food that's actually edible.
Let's talk New Orleans first. New Orleans is fascinating because for decades and decades and centuries, the food scene was kind of the same. And that's not necessarily a criticism. It was just very traditional, very steeped in tradition. And I do feel in the last 10 years, certainly post-Katrina, it's modernized a lot. And there's a lot more diversity now to sort of complement those classic eateries. But it is when you're in New Orleans and you guys have been there, it literally feels like you're in a different country. And it's like there's nothing else in America remotely like it.
And trying to translate that, obviously, to a golf tournament is not the easiest thing. But they are bringing in. I think I sent you the list of some of the names. I don't know if it looks if that excites your senses or if that's something that raises the bar on people's taste buds and kind of their awareness of food.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, listen, if you're in New Orleans, you know food and you're there to eat. You have certain expectations. Here's my list. All right, so if you're in New Orleans, first thing you're doing, like, you know, high rollers like you guys are, you're doing Friday lunch at Galatoire's. Galatoire's is one of those most classic, old school New Orleans restaurants right in the French Quarter. No reservations. So you got to walk in, and then if you're a regular there, they always say to you, do you have someone who takes care of you? And so you essentially, the waiters are like caddies. So you have like your guy. So you have a waiter or your gal who takes care of you. So you put your name down with that waiter. That's who you're requesting to sit in his or her station. And they know you there. And so once you're seated, what I love about Galatoire's, you can go to lunch and you'll see like Archie Manning and those types of folks there. You can go at noon or on a Friday and you will be there till 5 o'clock. And when once you sit down, they do not give you a menu till you request the menu. So you can sit there and drink for an hour and a half. You've got your Sazerac going. You're hanging out with your friends. And then when you're ready to order, then you order. But it is a very leisurely sort of all-afternoon affair. And you're getting the kind of the classic New Orleans food. You're getting, you know, the fish of the day, meuniere with crab meat on top. You've got the souffle potatoes with the béarnaise dipping sauce. You have a thing called the Grand Goûté, which is a sort of like a seafood tasting plate with like the shrimp and the remoulade and a crab sauce and whatnot. And it's just that sort of experience where you're like, oh, this is what New Orleans is all about. And like, you get it. And no one is in a rush. You're just sort of taking your time, hanging out and drinking and eating and hanging out in the air conditioning, most importantly.
Okay, so that's lunch, and do we even have room for dinner? Sounds amazing.
You're just going out and drinking at night. So that's okay. One. On the old side of things, on the new side of things, our best new restaurant in America last year was called Turkey and the Wolf, and it's actually a sandwich shop in New Orleans, and this guy Mason Hereford runs it, and he kind of looks like McConaughey's brother from Dazed and Confused. He's got like the mustache and the trucker hat and everything, and he's this sort of mad genius of making these sandwiches that are essentially kind of what you grew up eating, but like the best version of it. He's got like fried bologna with potato chips in there and griddled toast and American cheese. He has a collard green melt, which is like a patty melt, but with collard greens and Swiss cheese and pickled cherry pepper dressing. And it's everything you bite into, you're like, oh my God, I had no idea that this type of sandwich could be so good. The tomato sandwich that he does down there with Duke's mayonnaise and sunflower seeds and like everything. You're just like, that is the maximum amount of flavor you could possibly pack into something. And you'll have to wait in line to get in, but it is absolutely worth it. 110%.
House has gone quiet on us. I'm worried, Adam, that he's just kind of disappeared.
No, I'm taking it all in. I look.
It's not like you usually make groaning noises or other noises.
Well, here's the thing. I was fortunate enough to have a pass at this New Orleans itinerary just 2 weeks ago.
Oh.
We, in a ranking on the House of Carbs, I'm not sure if you had a chance to listen yet, Bill Simmons came on, and we did a ranking of 16-1 of all 16 NBA cities, all the cities that host NBA teams that are in this 2018 NBA playoffs. And, of course, New Orleans came in number one. So I want to hear Adam's roster here and then compare it to the notes that I took as we, you know, how we came up with our ranking of New Orleans number one. It's not really that far of a stretch, though, to declare New Orleans, at least for among the 16 cities that have NBA teams in these playoffs, as number one. I mean, it edged out Houston and Toronto and the Bay Area. But still, it's not like anything that anybody could really get outraged about.
No, it would be nice if our New York City Knicks were in the playoffs, so that could at least be in the competition of best NBA food.
Got to make the playoffs, New York.
My take on New Orleans is, it's a place unlike any other, to steal a Masters line. The culture is as deep and rich as it gets. The one knock against New Orleans is it can be a little monotonous, if you will. While it is more diverse than it used to be, there's not as many types of sort of cuisines and restaurants. You're going to have to look really hard to get anything remotely healthy-ish or like a fresh salad there, which is fine if you're only there for a couple of days, but it will take a toll on you. You will be bringing the extra large pack of Tums with you when you go there. And you also, listen, po' boys, we didn't even talk about po' boys. You got to go on a po' boys tour. I love Liuta's by the Track, which is an awesome bar/po' boy joint. You can also have great gumbo there. There's a cool place called Killer Po' Boys, which is in the back of an old bar. And there they do kind of a new school Vietnamese riffs on po' boys. And they've got like some shrimp po' boys, like a banh mi. They do a pork belly one. So they've sort of modernized the game a little bit. But that one's definitely worth hitting up as well.
And is there I love New Orleans music. I love the kind of the vibe. Is there any place that combines great food and the music scene?
Oh, that's a really good question. The last time I was at the Hi-Ho Lounge, which was sort of an awesome place where you get the sort of the bands, and it's like kind of a... It's just quirky and oddball. It's rollicking. It's jumping. Ooh. Outside. The last time I was there, they had like the pleather sort of sparkly vinyl banquettes just pulled out on the sidewalk, and you're just like, people are just sitting there on the sidewalk, and there was a dude there with a big ass kettle grill going, just grilling up wings, and you're listening to the band inside, coming out with your beer because you can drink on the streets there, buying wings from this guy, sitting in these booths on the middle of a sidewalk, and you're like, God bless this place.
Yeah, and didn't Commander's Palace, doesn't that place get credit for inventing the jazz brunch?
I mean, there's two words that I don't particularly love are jazz and brunch, and those together, you know, but I digress. In most cities, that would scare me like five ways to hell, but in New Orleans, you're like, oh, that's actually a probably good thing. They got good music, and they got good drinks, and they got good food, so they actually know how to do it right there.
Yeah, birthplace of jazz, and basically all of the food you might eat in New Orleans, it's all brunch food because it's all day food. All the food in New Orleans is all day food as far as I'm concerned. If you're in New Orleans, you can have gumbo at 11 o'clock at night or 6:30 in the morning, and hopefully in the same day. 6:30 in the morning is your first, and then 11 o'clock at night is your capper.
I would say, no, I would do it the other way around. 6:30 in the morning is your last. Like, that's what you're eating right before you go to bed because you've been out all night on Bourbon Street, Joe. Come on, man.
Yes, yes. Well done. That's exactly right.
All right. Well, none of the pro golfers this week will be doing that because they actually have to play golf in the Zurich Classic. But, Adam, to pivot to the actual purpose of this podcast, tell us a little bit about your life in golf. How did you get into the game? And kind of your assessment of your level of passion and frequency of play these days.
I started playing in high school in Washington, D.C., where I grew up with Joe House, although I did not know Joe House, but we're the same age. Grew up in the 80s. I would play the Rock Creek course, Rock Creek Golf Course, which is a city-run course. And I think it was like $10 maybe for either 9 holes or 18. I couldn't remember. But back in the day, we'd take our dad's, you know, big, you know, heavy leather bags with the persimmon clubs and just go out there and whack it around. And I kind of got into it there and then got back into it when I moved to Manhattan in the 90s. And there's that great window when you have a job, but you're not married and don't have kids. And so, like, every Saturday, you're like, all right, let's go play golf. I literally have nothing else to do. So got heavily into golf, and then I've just been watching and watching way too much golf every weekend ever since then, listening to Shack House. Yeah, just consuming an inordinate amount of golf. And I just, yeah, it's one of those things I love, and I just, again, I can't get enough of it. And I do think, as much as I kind of say this is a terrible thing to say, but golf is like sex in a lot of ways. You talk about it a lot more than you do it, especially living in New York City. So it's like it takes forever to get to the course. You know, it's expensive. I have a wife and kid now and a job. But yeah, we plan it a lot. We talk about it, and every now and then we get out and play.
So how has golf in any way shaped your leanings in terms of taste, style, food? I know golf tends to be a few years behind the rest of culture, so that may be an issue for you. But has it been a part of your life that way?
Well, one of the best things about working for Condé Nast is I've been able to play courses that I have no right to play, and given my skill level, and through like the guys at Golf Digest, which is part of our company, I've been able to play Shinnecock the last like 5 years every October, where this obviously the U.S. Open is coming up soon, and that course is that's my favorite course in America. It's the most gorgeous, beautiful course, the waving fescue grass and the green fairways and the beautiful Sanford White clubhouse up on the hill. And then after you're done playing there, when we've had our gatherings, there's always a guy with like the clam and oyster bar standing outside shucking oysters and clams for you. That one's amazing. I played the last couple of years, been lucky to play Pine Valley with Jerry Tardy, the editor of Golf Digest. And Pine Valley, rugged course, challenging course. And when you go there, they will always, anyone you're with who's a member will insist that you get the snapper soup, which is
So what's your take on
it? House, did you have it when you went?
Of course, you can't go there and not have the turtle soup.
I was a guy who didn't want it. I'm like, I don't want turtle soup for lunch. I just want my club sandwich. I don't want it to do the whole thing where you get the sherry and you pour it in there and that gumbo-like stock.
Why not? What are you talking about?
I'm a very delicate eater. I don't want to upset my stomach before I get on the course. I just wanted like a light lunch. You know, I didn't want to overdo it.
Well, this is a good segue into one of the topics I know Shaq wanted to make sure that we covered today, which is you're in charge. It's your golf course. We'll call it Rappo Links, or the links at Rappo, you know, Fields.
National.
Yeah, links at Rappo National. That's right. And you get to design the food, the menu, and the kind of situation. Like, where do you want the halfway house? Do you want it halfway? And what do you want to be on that halfway house menu? I don't want to overwhelm you with all the variables here.
Yeah, it's a
but
lot.
That's, but, let's,
yeah.
let's start with that as kind of the all lead right. item.
Okay, first and foremost, the first thing you eat, like if you're a golf course this day and age, you got to have a good egg and cheese sandwich. And maybe you got a little ham on there, a little bacon, or a little sausage. But if you have an 8 a.m. tee time, you did not wake up and make breakfast for yourself.
Right.
So you get to the course, and they have to have it ready to go, wax, you know, wrapped in wax paper, maybe on a little Kaiser roll or something squishy. And I want that. Yeah, I want just like, I want American cheese. I want a little hot sauce on there. And like, you got to give me something. I don't want a granola bar for breakfast. I don't want an energy bar for breakfast. Give me some egg and cheese. That's what I mean. You know, when you and I were at Sea Island, Georgia last month, remember that little stack of those they had at the little buffet table that you could grab them and go?
As you're walking by, they're on your way through the clubhouse en route to the first tee.
And I wonder if I had a good one at Wilshire also, Wilshire Country Club, where the LPGA tournament was last week. They have a good one at the little sort of the to-go shack. And that's what there has to be a to-go-ness. I don't want to have to sit down and eat breakfast at a golf course.
Yeah. And is the egg runny on that? Or do you want it cooked a little longer so that you don't make a big mess to start the day?
Yeah, you know, I've been the guy where I bite into like the fried egg sandwich, and I've got the sandwich tilted, and then all the yolk just runs straight out onto the table, and I feel like a dipstick. So I personally like a soft scramble with a little salt and pepper in the scramble itself, and the American cheese gives me the gooiness that I need.
Okay. So grab and go for breakfast.
Yeah, grab and go for breakfast. Halfway House, I think there's some good ones now where they're getting creative, where it's kind of the self-serve sort of deal a lot of times, where they've got the little like drawer, the refrigerator drawers that you pull out. I mean, that's really nice. That's stocked up with sort of grab and go stuff. Shaq, we were talking earlier, and you were talking about the burger dog at Olympic, which talk to me about that because I'm very intrigued.
Yeah, it's the perfect food, really, for a golf course because, first of all, the Bill Burger there is situated in the halfway house, comfort station, whatever you want to call it. It's at the 10th green, which is great. But what's even better, it's not far from the 14th green. It's not far from the 6th green. So you can hit it a few different times during the round. And it's just a cool tradition. It was a shack that was off property. The members loved it. They brought it on property. There's a great piece on golfdigest.com by Matt Rudy if you want all the details on Bill and how it became this hot dog stand / burger. But they sell about 200 of them a day. They've been doing it for, probably 40 years. But what's great about it is that if you're walking, and most people are walking the Olympic Club, it's the verticality. It's the hot dog shape, but it's done as a burger. And it just, you get the smell throughout the golf course, which to me is vital. It just gets you excited as you're kind of building up to the 10th hole, and you can smell it. And then they prepare it for you. Now you can ask for some things to be left off. But they kind of do it a certain way. And I seem to remember somebody asking for ketchup last time that I was there, and they were kind of scoffing at that. But it's cheese, red relish, mustard, dill pickles, and onions, and it's just very simple, really. They even put the recipe on the Hot Dog Bill's website, and it's just you can walk and eat it. It's easy to set down. It's tasty, but it's not messy. And then again, the smell throughout the golf course is just amazing.
Yeah, I had a couple of thoughts. I think the hot dog shape is genius because you can grab it with one hand, and so that's key. I had one small issue on when they were talking about the recipe. They said they use 85% lean beef.
Yeah,
that's too lean.
If you want it more like 80%, you want 20% fat, that's what's going to give you the really good like Shake Shack style burger where it's just really rich and fatty. You want some of that fat for that crisp and juicy.
Yeah,
so
that's a
small complaint.
That's absolutely good to know.
Exactly. And I think with the halfway house, as you point out, it needs to be accessible more than just once during the round. There's nothing worse than when you're on that. Of course, you only come by it once, like on the ninth hole. You're like, maybe I'm hungry before that or after that. So it's got to be accessible more than once. Yeah, and it has to be. Those sort of places need to be a little bit quick. Is there anything worse than when you order something and you're just waiting and waiting and waiting?
Yeah. So, no, it doesn't work. And the call ahead thing isn't right. Now, that's what's probably what people love about the comfort stations now, where it's sort of the all you can eat. They just tend to be a little bit too conspicuous consumption driven for me. That's what I love about the bill stand there at Olympic, because it's just they keep it very simple. They don't do a whole lot, but they know what they do well. Now, to your point, though, on hitting it multiple times in the round, there are places in different parts of the world that are doing something I like that's different, and you have to prepare for it, but where they actually have a little more elaborate situation, and it's almost something you know is part of the round. You almost stop, and if somebody wants to go through, it's a great place to let them go through, but it's kind of a spot where you sit, you chill, you take in the view of whatever it is. There are a few of them. I mean, the Valley Club in Montecito has an unbelievable one up in the Oaks that they set up for weekends and tournaments just incredible. And again, it's a place like, hey, if there's a group of people that are flying, you let them go. Gil Hansen, I routed a course in Puerto Vallarta. It was kind of a weird sight. And we had it starting down at the ocean. You go up to this high point, and we were going to have a spot where there was just a cool outdoor setting where you kind of chilled. You had some ceviche and maybe a little tequila. And it was just, you knew it was going to be part of the round and the experience. Most people don't like that. They're in a hurry. I think if you know it's coming, it's okay.
Expected, and notice some of those private clubs where you're expected to finish your round in 4 hours, and if you don't, you get a letter from the boss man. So have you ever had, I always hear about like the milkshakes at, what is it, Castle Pines in Colorado or the one at Jack's Place in Ohio? Have you had the milkshakes at those joints?
I have, and they are sensational. There's no question. They really are special.
But you don't consume those during the round, do you?
They're more locker room post round, and that makes sense. Yeah, because you can't have a shake on the course. It just isn't. It isn't right. I think that's what's cool about golf right now. There are a lot of places doing their own thing, their own little twist on something.
Yeah, I think you guys have both hit on sort of the key attributes, the key features of what you're trying to consume during a round and the various ways you might do it. It has to be portable. That's a vital characteristic. And it has to be, to me, it needs to be something that can be eaten in 6 bites or less. I can't have anything that's more involved than 6 bites, and it can have a sauce or a condiment of some sort, but it can't be messy because there's an excellent chance I'm eating it with my golf glove still on my hand, and I can't get into a situation where my golf glove is befouled by whatever, sauce.
Yeah.
So one of the things I like
if you're like Rory or Jordan Spieth and you're wearing white pants, you can't have like the barbecue sauce and everything dripping all over your white pants.
Well, this is a great segue. I was going to observe one of the things I've liked and seen. Now the chicken salad in a cup is a classic. Mm. The innovation that I've observed and enjoyed quite a bit down at the Piedmont Driving Club down in Atlanta is one place I've enjoyed this. Q in a cup. So it's a little bit of a pulled pork kind of deal or beef barbecue, depending on what they have going that day. Not overly sauced. They might present it with just the smoked flavor, and then you can add a little sauce if you're inclined to do so and you want to live dangerously.
I beg to differ. I've not been to said place, but that requires you to hold it in one hand. Then you have to have a utensil, like a spork or something. And like, what are you doing? Like, you're doing this how? Like, what if you're driving the golf cart, or say it's a walking course, and you got your clubs and you've got two hands full? That's house. Come on.
No, it's part of the routing. So as you proceed from one side to the other side of the golf course, this is properly located. And the idea is that you will be done consuming this by the time you make it to the next hole. Mm. And you are able to navigate the fork and the cup by virtue of one of two things. Either you're with a caddy that's helping you along, or you are in a cart and everything is self-contained, and you can go ahead and take a minute and have a couple bites and then roll over to the next tee and finish off the remaining two or three bites. Again, 6 bites or less, and then you're on to the next portion of the golf course.
I'm gonna have to play it. I guess it also appeals to the gluten-free crowd because there's no bun involved, so I guess they would like that.
All right, what about after the round?
Okay,
what's your dream setup?
After the round, because there's if you play early, you've got lunch. If you play later, you've got drinks and stuff. Lunch, like I'm okay with getting a little bit creative, you know, but don't get fancy with me. There's nothing worse when you go to the clubhouse and, we've got this great new chef who just came in. I'm like, I don't care about your chef. Like, I go to enough restaurants with fancy chefs. Like, I don't need to go to the clubhouse and get a fancy chef. I want a Cobb salad. I want a club sandwich. House and I, when we at Sea Island House, those Cobb salads were amazing. Beautiful Cobb salads. And then you could choose between shrimp on top, blackened chicken, or the fried chicken sort of chopped up tender sort of situation. And you get the avocado and the egg and the blue cheese and the crisp bacon. And that was, am I wrong? Was that wonderful?
That was wonderful, and they also offered a version of the club sandwich that you're talking about that had lump crab in it, and I'm going to botch the name. I don't have it off the top of my head now, but you could eat it in the men's clubhouse, and we were lucky enough to play some afternoon rounds while we were down there at Sea Island in between some instruction in the morning and our afternoon round, and this lump crab club sandwich was just spectacular. It has a special name down there, and everybody knows it down there.
I want to say it was the Crabcino sandwich.
There we go, the Crabcino. I mean, back me up. That was a wonderful variation, local custom variation on it, right?
And I would file that under creative, but not fancy. You know what I'm saying? Like, we were afterwards, we last year, Shaq, how come you never come on these golf trips with us? Did House not like you?
I tried to get invited this year, but
it's for sponsors. I don't,
it was for people who had to knock off the East Coast rough.
We're a little judgmental about you West Coasters, but we were at TBT Sawgrass.
No, it's jealousy because we can play golf year round. Go ahead.
We were at TPC Sawgrass last year, and what I love there in the clubhouse, which is a lot of fun. I mean, I know there's a lot that's been written on a clubhouse and how big it is and all that sort of stuff, but good vibes in there. They have homemade potato chips with all their sandwiches. Mm. The potato chips are quite good, and they're dusted with some sort of seasoning salt. So when you get a sandwich to go, they put it in the little plastic clamshell thing with the potato chips. And then, House, after the round, do you remember the buffalo shrimp we got?
They were absolutely wonderful. I remember them because we got a round of them, and they were like, whoa, 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 whoa. This is not nearly enough. We need two more rounds of these. Yeah, so we immediately double ordered because of the quality of that experience.
Yeah, so they're essentially buffalo wings, but with big, plump, like, southern shrimp, and that was phenomenal. So, yeah, I like that sort of stuff. I'm like, it's smart, but it's not trying to go into like restaurant, fancy French or whatever sort of food, you know,
right.
Like I don't, that's the kind of food I want at a golf course. I want it to be delicious, well-executed versions of classic food.
Okay. But it's okay if they try the little twists on the classics. You do like that. If a place finds something kind of a sweet spot where something works.
Yeah, you know, like I said, if they do it well, that's great.
Yeah.
And then I'm the guy who I will always order the club sandwich at the club. And maybe I always have an issue. I don't understand people who do the ham, the cheese, and the turkey together on a club sandwich. In my mind, a club sandwich is turkey, bacon, and then lettuce, tomato, and mayonnaise. But
right.
I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah. No, I agree. And so that's like when people go to a Mexican restaurant and get the number one with the beef taco and the cheese enchilada. This is your barometer, the club sandwich. You just kind of
exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
I
love that.
Well, I also think it's nice at a club at lunchtime. I like it they give you these half a sandwich and soup option. Soup of the day. I think that's a nice option for lunchtime before you go out and play.
As long as it's not the snapper soup. Now, kind of what do you take as sort of – because clubs right now especially and resorts, everybody's struggling in golf where they want to improve the food and beverage and people are demanding it. But then there's so much competition from the restaurant industry. It's so incredible now what you can do. So what is your view on kind of the formal dining, the evening post-round meal – the kind of the answer to that. What is a club and what does golf have going for it that restaurants don't have, and what can it milk out of all of their great facilities?
Well, I think what it has going for it, if you're a member somewhere, is comfort factor. They know you, they take care of you. you've got your guy who, you know, your waiter, again, like going back to Galatoire's, you got the bartender or the waiter who takes care of you. It's like your caddy in the restaurant. And I think they, when the you use the word formal, and that is the last thing people want at a club. It's almost the last thing people want in restaurants these days. Go to the best restaurants in America right now. None of them have tablecloths. None of them have big flower displays or fine china and glassware. It's these restaurants that are fun and young and like great food, but without the pretense and the arrogance. And clubs need to follow suit, and I think certain places do. I've been with House at Chevy Chase Club outside of D.C. And House, when we were there at night, like, that's a fun place. Like, there's kids running around, there's music playing, you're hanging out with the Adirondack chair, you're getting, what's that cocktail you guys drink there?
We were drinking, we have introduced the Fescue Rescue there. We just order those to our own heart's content. You know, the drink that the folks at Aaron Hills were drinking, allegedly. You know, it's a ginger beer bourbon, I think, if I'm not recalling. There's also a Planner's Punch, a version of Planner's Punch over there with a rum topper that is potent. But yeah, I mean, the Chevy Chase Club's great because it's a family vibe where, you know, the dads can sit together and have a drink and the kids are having their fun and we're off at the pool and the moms are all, you know, doing their thing as well.
Yeah,
have, you know what they have, which everyone loves in America? They've got a good sushi bar. Everyone wants sushi. Like, if you have a good sushi bar, no one will ever complain. And again, like, what I love about that place is it's fun. And if you have kids, and if your kids are having fun, then you're having fun, you know?
Right.
And that's what a club can offer that restaurants typically cannot.
Yeah, and a lot of clubs now are getting the pizza ovens so that the kids have something more fun to eat. Go ahead.
Do you know who else likes pizza? Everyone likes pizza.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, like, for kids of all ages, but especially out in California, Arizona, where the weather's nice, and you can be hanging outside on the patio, and you got a pizza oven, a big, you know, one of those cool clay pizza ovens going, and you have a rotisserie grill grilling up, you know, all sorts of tasty meats. Like, that's what you want. You want to be hanging out outside. Like, I can go get fancy food any other night of the week. When I'm at the club, I want to just chillax, you know, get my drink on and eat some tasty food, but nothing too fancy.
Wow! Yeah, everything you've described is what they do at Augusta Country Club. They've taken their money from Augusta National and spent it very well. They have a couple of outdoor fire pits. They've got one with a couple of flat screens so that it's more, and it's a little bit away. So if you want to go and watch a sporting event, but the thing you have to have at the Augusta Country Club, and this gets to Rappo, your parameters that you've laid out here for a dessert drink. They do a Velvet Hammer. They've done it forever. And it's all the little stuff they do. I asked my member who hosted last time, Chad Evans, who I met through Jonathan Baker, who works for the Masters. And the ingredients are simple. It's Breyers vanilla, Kahlua vodka. They don't try to reinvent the wheel, but they do a couple of things you'll appreciate. Little touches. First of all, they don't make it ridiculously large because it is fairly potent. And they serve it in the club's logoed styrofoam cup. Or sometimes the logoed plastic cup like you guys got at the Masters with the beverages. Mm-hmm. And so that way you don't feel like you're being told to rush. It's kind of encouraged to be a social drink. You walk around, but you can take it home, you know, because it's a dessert shake. But it tastes so good. They're so well prepared. And they've been doing it forever. Nobody can even recall when it started. It's been going on so long. And it's just one of those great little traditions at all their events. It's sort of expected. And I think it fits your parameters because even though, you know, ice cream is incredible in a lot of different ways, but Breyers is, you can't go wrong. And done right, the execution is just masterful. So you have to go there. Their whole outdoor thing is amazing. And not enough clubs really are highlighting the importance of the outdoor dining, I don't think.
Shaq, we have to make you a deal, right? Because we can't just go there. So
Well, I would... arrange to introduce you to the right people.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll invite you. You can come to Knock Off the Rust 2019 if you can make this introduction for us to get over to the Augusta Country Club and enjoy this delicious drink.
Oh, it's a great place.
I want to very quickly, I'm not interrupting you, Rappo. I don't want to get yelled at for not knowing the ingredients of the Fescue Rescue. It's a third Jameson, a third lemonade, and a third ginger beer. Perfect summer drink.
Nice. And you know what's funny about all these things we've talked about today that are sort of iconic, whether it's the Velvet Hammer, the Fescue Rescue, the Burger Dog, these are all very simple things. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, there's nothing highfalutin about any of these, and these are what people love. And like, you're hanging out outside, you got the fire pit going, you got your styrofoam cup with some ice cream and Kahlua and vodka in there. Like, that's what makes you happy, man. Like, that's golf, you know? Like, that's why I when golf's done well, when clubhouses get it right, you're like, oh, this is awesome. I don't want to leave, you know, and that's what the clubhouse wants you to be. They want you to spend time there, and if they do it right, that's what you want to do.
We're in agreement.
Well, House, is there anything else we want to get out of him while we've got him here before he goes and has probably some amazing food tonight? What are you having for dinner tonight?
I'm going to a very nice restaurant called King in downtown Manhattan, the West Village, and it's very simple Italian food, like Italian, like a plate of like Tuscan beans and a simple piece of like roast pork, maybe a little pasta, a beautiful salad. Again, no bells and whistles, but really nice ingredients prepared very simply and very well in a very nice intimate space. Going to meet another couple there, so that should be fun.
So great. I have one request, Shaq, and this is the the last thing for Rappo. As he mentioned, the U.S. Open this year is being competed, barely 2 hours away from New York City. Where else is it? What house do you describe it? It's being competed.
It's being played.
Sure, whatever. Right outside of New York's 2 hours away, out there in lovely Long Island, we're all going to be in each other's company, either in New York City proper or out at Shinnecock. I mean, we got to have a meal together, right?
Yeah. Well, or we could try to actually do golf beforehand. I think that would be the wiser move.
I mean, I would love that.
I don't think we'll be able to lunch at the National Golf Links for a little while. I believe the kitchen's going to be down, but all is well. Nothing on the walls burned. Everything's good there. That wasn't a shot. I'm very happy to.
Okay,
I was worried about all the paintings and stuff.
We'll work on an invite to like Friar's Head or Maidstone or one of those.
Yeah, we shouldn't telegraph it too hard. But I've already started working on that. I've already started working on it. So
I know you have.
So keep those dates the weekend before the U.S. Open available.
You got that, Rappo?
That makes me all very happy.
Yeah, keep the calendar clear. We're going to eat and play golf.
All right, well, you go enjoy your dinner at King. House and I are going to talk about the Valero Texas Open and
Do we have to?
No, we're not going to. We've already done it a little bit. We're going to make some thrilling predictions about the Zurich, but we really appreciate the thoughts. Obviously, everybody can follow you on your best platforms are Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat might be a little tough for House and I, but those are your three primary.
Yeah,
accounts.
You can find me on Instagram and Instagram stories at Rappo4, just RAPO numeral 4. And lots of food stuff and occasional golf and this and that.
Love your stories. And of course, Bon Appetit. I read on Texture or courtesy of Texture on the iPad. But of course, everybody knows they can go online and subscribe very easily. It's a phenomenal magazine. I love your columns. May is a travel issue, but there's no golf, but that's okay. We won't hold it against you. And we look forward to more great issues to come.
All right. Thanks so much, guys.
All right. Thanks, Rappo.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
All right. As always, big, big thanks to the homie, Adam Rappaport, for coming on this Shaq House production and giving us all that glorious food and golf insight. Shaq and I are about to give out our picks for this week's Zurich Classic. But before we get there, quick word from our pals at Helix Sleep. There is nobody on the planet like you, so why would you buy a mattress built for anyone else? Working with the world's leading sleep experts, Helix Sleep has developed a mattress that is customized to your specific height, weight, and sleep preferences so you can have the best sleep of your life at an unbeatable price. Just go to helixsleep.com and fill out their 2-minute sleep quiz. In 2018, Helix Sleep has taken customized sleep to the next level with the Helix Pillow, which are fully adjustable so you can achieve perfect comfort regardless of sleep position or body type. You know, Shaq, I'm getting two of those. I'm getting one for my head and one to put in between my legs because my hips, after 100 holes of golf. No, I'm just telling you.
Oh, it's
you
only for the post 100 holes. Okay.
Yeah, for the 100 holes. I got to prop them up. Helix will also, Shaq, design your custom mattress for even you and a partner. So how about that? A little bit of a custom for you, custom for the partner. Helix Sleep has thousands of 5-star reviews, plus you get 100 nights to try them out. Go to helixsleep.com/shaqhost right now, and you will get up to $125 towards your mattress order. That's helixsleep.com/shaqhost for up to $125 toward that mattress order. helixsleep.com/shaqhost. Do it now.
All right, House, the Zurich Classic returns for the second year now with two-man teams. They're playing alternate shot 2 rounds. They're playing best ball the other 2 rounds. It's going to be a pretty good field again. Actually, a really good field, I think, if you break down the world ranking. It's marked by the return of Brooks Koepka. And I think you're really most excited, not that he's paired with Mark Trinessa, or that they are debuting the team of Sergio Garcia and Rafa Cabrera-Bello. No, I think you're most excited about the walk-up music
you
on the weekend.
You know me so well. Yeah. You know me so well, Shaq. All right.
God,
give me,
this is gonna
I'm going to
so
give you
bad.
Mine. Yeah, I'm going to give you mine. You have to give me yours.
I don't have a – oh, please.
Come on. What are you talking about? I have – obviously, I'm going with – I would choose, you know, I might actually, are they playing it all 4 days or for?
No, just the weekend.
Oh, just the
weekend.
You have
to make the cut. So
well, that means
these guys who are scripting out their likely walk-up music really need to preface it by saying, if we make the weekend. But anyway,
So Saturday, my son, both of these are iterations of the same song,
obviously.
Now,
you have a partner in this event, so you really only get to pick one, and the partner should, in theory, get the other song, right?
I guess. I would try and dominate. Right. I would try and
we're
force
a team,
my will.
You can pick our music.
All right, I'm picking for the Saturday. Yeah, and you don't, obviously you get to choose your own. I'm housing by EPMD, the classic rap duo. I'm going way back to the late 80s, early 90s. EPMD, I'm housing.
Dear.
Come on, Shaq.
Nah.
You don't got one for me? Yeah.
And how are you going to – I guess I'd be –
I mean, Rage Against the Machine did a version of it subsequent in the 2000s, but I like to go with the old school version. I want to kick it my way.
And are you, but how are you, like, are you going to come out dancing to this?
Nah,
I mean, that's what I'm at.
All I want to do is create the vibe. I'm not doing anything. I'm walking up. I'm putting my tee in the ground. I'm hitting the ball. The music speaks for itself.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't need to, the show is the song. I don't need to put on an extra show. The show is the song and my glorious driver swing, Shaq.
Yeah, I just know. I'm anxious to see how guys handle the actual walk. Like now, Bubba could probably pull off something with the music. There are a few guys I could see handling it, but I mean, if I'm walking out to the Love Shack by the B-52s, which is a, you know, really predictable choice for me, but I think it's safe. Like, what am I? I'm getting ready to play a round of golf. What am I going to do? Come out dancing like Al Cervic and Caddyshack? I mean, It's awkward to me. I think it's going to lead to some very awkward white people moments, but that's just me.
That's glorious. Obviously.
Yeah, well, okay,
that's
you're
exactly
right.
What's going to happen, and that's why it's wonderful.
Speaking of that, so Steve Stricker and Jerry Kelly are playing this week, as is John Daly from the Champions Tour. He's paired with Rory Sabatini.
That's my very favorite pairing. Let there be no doubt. That's the best pairing on this whole tee sheet.
Yeah. So
I'm heroes.
Stricker and Kelly, though, I'll be very curious to see what they'll play if they make the weekend. And the way they're playing, why not? I mean, they're number one and two in the Charles Schwab Cup points race right now. So, and they tied for 14th last year. Let's see. We got Bubba Watson, Matt Kuchar. There's three teams that are where the duo is within the world top 25, and Sergio Rafa are the other one, and of course Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson, who are back both because of their love for Zurich Insurance and then also this event. David Duval is stepping out of the broadcast booth to play with Jim Furyk. So the defenders are Jonas Blix, Cam Smith, and then, of course, our former Shackhouse guest and phenomenal team player in both match play and this event, Kevin Kisner, who made that incredible eagle last year. He's back with Scott Brown. He may have to do a little carrying this week, Hal. Scott Brown has not played well, has not been in the top 45 since last November. So I am going to pick Sean O'Hare and Jimmy Walker this week because they were playing so beautifully at the Valero. O'Hare finished with a T2, and Jimmy Walker finished fourth. So they both have been showing signs of life, and I think they're going to make a great duo.
I am going to go with the combination of Hot España and Taco Bell. I love John Rahm and Wesley Bryan. Mm. I very much enjoy just the background of how they've come to be friends and that they're close guys. Now, Rahm is obviously in form. Wesley seems like now over the past 12 months, his approaches from beyond 200 yards, he is well ahead of average in that respect, but I feel like he hasn't been putting that great lately. So, you know, in some respects, if he has to jump on big Johnny Rahm's back, I mean, I know John can handle him. I would like to talk to Wes Bryan and get a little bit of insight into how, what did I say?
Wes, it's okay. I'm just reminding you. Okay. He likes Wesley. It's like Headley versus Hedy Lamar, you know, that kind of thing.
But I just like the personalities of those two, what I've observed just from the television screen. I don't know whether or not, you know, up close and personal, but the fire of Rahm and Wesley's cool style, I think they're a fun combo. That's my pick. Just because I think they're fun.
Yeah, I'd love to know how. I feel like I thought I saw a story about how those two got linked up. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It'll be fascinating to see how Rahm works in that environment with Wesley personality-wise, because he still is getting pretty hot on the course. And if that is something that kind of calms him down. I wish the field or this tournament only had one round of alternate shot. I think two is too much. That's a really tough format, and it might even scare a few guys off just because you have to really get along well. If somebody's having a bad day in alternate shot, it can be really tough. It's a better format for match play. I personally would love to see one round of scramble, kind of like the Shark Shootout does. I just think it'd be I love the different disciplines, but either way, it's fun. We have the chance for walk-up music intrigue, and it's a great celebration of all things New Orleans, and of course some very fine players in the field once again. So I'm really happy for Zurich that this format is so far holding together. House, is there anything else you want to kick around from the week? Anything else you want to mop up from our chat with Adam?
No, I want to mop up a delicious, gravy from the debris sandwich. You know, that's the roast beef version of the po' boy, and I'm starving right now after that chat. I do have one question for you before I yell Shackhouse under this microphone, and it's this. Does the PGA Tour permit players to smoke on the golf course, or is there an image issue with that?
No, they're permitted. It's an interesting question you ask, though, because they are discouraged. Tim Fincham absolutely loathe smoking, and players who do smoke do seem to hide it. But I don't know of any specific clause that actually prevents them from doing it on course.
It just feels like we might see 15 packs of cigarettes with Rory and John Daly. I just can't tell you how excited I am to see those two dudes out on the golf course together. And I don't, you know, the combustibility of it feels like it's really mitigated because nobody can ever get mad at JD. So Rory's not going to get mad. What if those guys make the cut? I'm telling you, I'm watching the tournament. That's going to be must-see TV, that combo right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe they'll make it on PGA Tour Live in the morning. But yeah, I'm going to look into that on the smoking, because it has been a long time since I can picture somebody smoking. I've heard of a couple stories of LPGA players going into the portable restroom after the group in front of them and walking into just a sea of smoke. So there are some players who just hide it because they don't like the look, which is an amazing thing. You know, but at the Masters, Ben Crenshaw was telling me the story about Snead and Hogan that Jackie Burke had told them in the playoff in 1954, and Hogan was smoking in the playoff.
Sure.
Yeah, it was part of the image that Mr. Burke painted of Hogan standing over there leaning on his club with a cigarette in his mouth. And yeah, it's kind of what you expect. But and of course, Jack Nicklaus used to smoke. And then once he saw himself doing that, that was what caused him to quit. It was the visual. He just thought it looked awful.
I think it looks glorious on JD. So,
oh yeah, no, it's the dangling. It's the way it's just that limp dangling of the cigarette. Hey, House, one last thing. You know, jailbreak technology got put to the test last week at the Valero Texas Open, and it's in the Rogue now, and it employs, of course, that new hourglass shaped titanium bar that is 25% lighter while fulfilling the function to stiffen the crown and sole. I know you know all this, but the stiffer body allows the face to take on more impact load to promote faster ball speed. And I really don't know why I'm telling you this, because it's all at the beautifully new redesigned CallawayGolf.com. Great videos, great tutorials, educational stuff, fitting, customs. There's some cool promotions right now on personalizing golf balls. Just go to CallawayGolf.com. Don't listen to me about Rogue.
Yeah, well, I can tell you.
Plus, I don't want to say anymore, because I'm going to go into an area with the Rogue right now that
I just want to say.
Oh, come on. Sergio's club toss was spectacular. I have to say it. It was beautiful. And I love that he went and retrieved it.
And that's another one of these combos that we're interested in, right? Sergio and Rafa, another straight out of Spain combo. That's going to be a great one.
And Sergio likes Pete Dye golf courses, so I think he'll be a lot happier at the TPC Louisiana this week. So that is a very strong team, I believe. And by the way, that Callaway driver came out of those bushes in great shape. So they are well manufactured.
I just love that he went and recovered it. Like, everybody just walked away. He had to go get his own driver.
I just
want
to know what he swatted at in the bushes, because I don't know if there was a critter that kind of snarled at him, but he took another swing at something and didn't hurt anything. No animals were hurt in the process. But anyway, well, it's a long Shack House this week, but we thank you all for listening, because really glad we finally got to have Adam Rappaport on. He's been a listener of the show. He's a friend of yours, a great contributor to House of Carbs, and it was most enjoyable. And now I'm very hungry, as are you, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I'm going to try not to hurt any more animals on with this week's edition of the Shack House, part of the Ringer Podcast Network.
Calling all podcast fans, Spotify makes it easier than ever to discover new shows to love. Get personalized episode recommendations and easily preview them before you dive right in. Find exclusive video episodes from your favorite hosts and guests. And with some, you can even connect with them through polls and Q&A directly within their episodes. It's everything you want in one app. So what are you waiting for? Try the podcast experience today on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.